Stokes joins us now from the Show Me Institute, Director of Municipal Policy. How you doing, Dave? Good to meet you. We haven't talked before on air.
It's great to be on the air with you. We're delighted at Show Me Institute to be a regular part of the, show going forward. We're excited.
I am so thrilled because there's just so much to unpack, and things are changing so rapidly. There's so many challenges and opportunities, you know, and boy, you guys just do such a great job there. And I know as Director of Municipal Policy, it warms my cockles, to use an old term. Maybe the Queen used that term once. I don't know. To think of that, really, our kids being involved in municipal government. I talked about it yesterday. I used to take the kids when we lived in Sunset Hills in St. Louis. I would take them to zoning committee, you know, commissioners meetings, whatever, the city hall, whatever. And just to show them that, man, that's really where government happens. That's where you learn about the beauty of a Western democracy, you know. And so you're right in the thick of it. I know we're going to talk about taxes, but I wonder if we could take a little detour and talk about this statute that's going to open things up a little bit, at least in some tightened jurisdictions, for home-based business. Can we touch on that a little bit?
I'd be happy to. So this is... this is a very interesting bill that the legislature really got right, and I said that this morning. You know, so oftentimes good public policy is moved in baby steps, but I think in this case it was a bigger change and a really good one, where they passed a state law prohibiting cities and counties and towns and villages from just blanket making illegal or continuing to have illegal rules against home-based businesses in the zoning statutes. That doesn't mean that anybody can just open any type of a home-based business in your neighborhood now. It does mean that there have to be tighter rules, better reasons behind it, and they can't just give a blanket prohibition on them. Think about how many tens of millions, heck, hundreds of millions, how many people have been working from home over the past 2.5 years in the pandemic and after it. And a lot of people like it. A lot of people especially like going into the office a few days a week, working from home a few days a week. And as silly as it sounds, in many instances, that's technically illegal. But it's a good thing for the legislature to just clarify that certain home-based businesses need to be allowed now. It doesn't mean that you're going to have somebody operating a retail store out of their house with people trafficking and parking in your neighborhood and coming and going all hours of the day. I mean, there's reasonable limitations that any city or county with zoning authority can still implement and enact, but you just can't do a blanket prohibition against it, and I think that's a terrific change.
So it does still give municipalities some leeway and to make some things, but it puts a curb on it. Is that what I'm hearing?
Absolutely. And I think most people like, whether I agree with it or not, I would bet that most people like in their residential community having rules against, say, a grocery store,
sure,
whatever it may be, a retail store right next to you. Most people want to preserve the residential character of their street or their neighborhood. And this will allow cities to do that. You'll still have a right to pass a zoning law that prevents, say, a house from operating a retail store. And I would predict that many cities and counties will adjust their zoning laws to do just that. And they'll keep that prohibition. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't allow you to say you can't operate a telephone-based business or a mail-based business or perhaps a counseling business where you use one room for counseling session and you have a few appointments come each day. Those are just a couple of many, many examples of things that will be necessarily allowed under zoning rules now. I'm sure you've got some listeners who live in neighborhoods with indentures or neighborhood covenants that prohibit that, and those are still allowed. This bill doesn't prohibit those, but it does take away the zoning authority for blanket prohibitions on home-based businesses, and I think it's a really good change and a really well-done job by the legislature on this one.
Well, let me ask you a little bit of a weedy question. Let's say that a homeowners association has a very restrictive one. I'm thinking about when I was a young man, my dad was a private teacher, and someone got all worried that at times there was a private music teacher as well as teaching school. But after school, he would go into the basement and teach. And once in a while, there'd be two, at most three cars there, you know. Someone in the neighborhood raised Cain, and it became an issue. So let's say that the homeowners association is more restrictive than the state law. Which trumps which? Which wins?
Well, I think that's a great example. That type of home-based music business, we've seen that throughout our nation's history of people who do that on the side. It's a great example. And in that instance, the homeowners association tighter rules will still apply.
Oh, okay.
This legal change is based on zoning and planning authority of municipalities and counties.
Okay.
It doesn't affect homeowners associations, and that's for better or worse. I live in St. Louis County, and I live in a neighborhood with a very strict indentures. Our subdivision, 100 years old, built before a lot of modern government services, so a lot of it was done privately and covered under neighborhood indentures, and we still have those. So those, for your listeners who live in a place with an HOA with strict rules against it, those will continue as an HOA issue. But no longer can it just be a blanket law under the zoning authority.
Well, Brian Hansen's really worried because he lives in, I understand, a very restrictive area, and you can't have a truck older than 5 years. And he just bought one, so I don't know what's going to happen. Brian, you think they're going to make you move?
Yeah, I don't think so.
I'm kidding you. I'm kidding you. Brian's got a new old truck.
Kind of.
All right, we're talking.
That's a great example, though, of what I think most people think are overly restrictive HOA policies. But those are the type of voluntary things you agree to when you buy or move into such a neighborhood.
And you can also amend those too, and you can become politically active in a very small and arm's length arrangement too. So it's a great way to get your feet wet with governance. Talking with David Stokes, Show Me Institute. So the special session is coming up. And some of the talk earlier this week was, well, they don't really have their act together, the Senate and the House, and maybe some of them haven't really connected with what the governor. It sounded like they were still scrambling to come up with the sort of the meeting before the meeting, which sounds like that's SOP. Where are we on that, and what are the kind of things that you want to see from the Show Me Institute in terms of the tax policy that may come out of this?
Well, I think they're still scrambling a little bit, and I don't say that as a criticism. It's a special session. They can set it for whenever they want, and currently it seems to be set for next week. Next week they're going to have the veto session for a few days, and the week after they've appear to have tentatively set the special session. So it's if it takes some time to get the plans together before they introduce the bills in the session and take the testimony, I'm fine with that. But from what we're hearing and in our conversations, there appears to be agreement on the big picture. The big picture being some type of reduction in the state's income tax, the state income tax rate, and some other changes to the state income tax code, such as increasing the standard deduction to help out lower income workers, especially in that case. And I think all of this is excellent. Mm-hmm. Of course, it may remain to be seen exactly what changes they make here or there. But in that bigger picture, if you're going to cut about the state income tax rate by another 0.5%, by moving up some previously scheduled cuts, by moving them up 4 or 5 years, I think that's terrific. Really moving in the right direction. The state of Missouri is not growing. That's not Dave Stokes' opinion. That's just based on gross GDP data from the past several decades. We're growing more slowly, than the vast majority of states. It's not impressive in our economic growth rates. And one of the things we can do to sort of imitate successful strategies in states that are growing, like Tennessee and Texas and Florida, and Tennessee's a good example to Missouri, very, very comparable in many ways. That state that they don't have any income tax in Tennessee, and that's definitely one of the reasons they've grown so fast over the past several decades. They're not proposing at this time to go to no income tax. I think that would be great to do in the long run here in Missouri. It's not going to happen within the next few years, but any tax cut in that direction to sort of benefit everybody instead of some special TIF or tax abatement or enterprise zone that benefits a few businesses, to just cut the tax rate for everybody in Missouri, all residents, I think that's a great strategy that'll benefit our whole state.
Now, I'm going to take you at your word verbatim. You said all residents, and I hope you, I don't get a lot of resonance with what I maintain, and whether you're talking about student loan forgiveness, or in this case, tax cuts, this rebate that was talked about. Why is it that they means test those things? I've never understood that. I understand that, you know, we have a progressive taxation system. But when you're talking about giving things out to people, I just think, you know, I think Jeff Bezos ought to get $500 if he lives in Missouri. Just out of principle. It's a matter of principle, because when they set limits, what were they saying? If over a certain amount, it would fade away. Or the student loan debt forgiveness, not that I agree with any of that, but if you're going to do it, what about the guy that makes $124,999? He doesn't get a rebate. He doesn't get the 10 grand forgiven, but the guy that makes $125,001 gets it. It's the arbitrary nature of where these thresholds that just, I guess I start growing pointy ears like Leonard Nimoy, if you know what I mean, when I start arguing this. But where do you stand on this, David?
I'm old enough to remember Star Trek, and I remember Leonard Nimoy's pointy ears and his famous appearance on The Simpsons as well. So I'm with you.
It's just not logical. Not logical, Jim. Okay, so go ahead, David. Where am I wrong here? You said all a tax cut for all Missourians. I wholeheartedly agree. All Missourians. Rex Singfield included. I'm sorry.
The proposals they're talking about now are to cut the state's income tax rate. And Missouri has an interesting system in that we actually have more tax brackets than most states. We have, I think, 9 tax brackets right now, and they're proposing to eliminate 1 or 2 of them. But because those brackets were set so long ago and never amended, the top bracket is so low that we essentially have a flat tax in Missouri, and that everybody who works at all, even if you just work part-time, you're going to be in that top tax bracket of now 5.4%. You have to work really part-time to be in a lower tax bracket than that. So the proposal is take that 5.4% and lower it to 4.8%. And I think that's a great idea. And that will affect, you know, it doesn't affect people who don't work, I guess.
It won't affect Hanson.
You don't have an income.
It won't affect Hanson then.
Well, you woke me up. Sorry. Did you say something?
I'm having fun with Brian today. No, I see what you mean. So in effect, it will be a flat tax. But, you know, going back to the whole taxation thing, you are so right. The common denominator among the growth states, both in population, I mean, they're stealing population from New York and California and Illinois like crazy, are that they don't tax people for being productive. That's another thing that has never made sense to Randy Tobler. Why? The more you work, the more it hurts. No, you shouldn't do that. The more you consume, the more you use public utilities, the more whatever. If you got to, you know, if you have Al Gore's house, 4,000 square feet, you know, that energy conserving house, and you're using lots of energy, okay, that's the way you should pay taxes, not because you're productive. So I agree with you. We need to phase out the income tax.
Absolutely. And, you know, a lot of people on the other side who disagree with this are starting to talk about Kansas and what Kansas did about a decade ago. And that's something we want to talk about, even if just briefly.
Yeah, please,
please. What Kansas did was they did a couple things about a decade ago. First of all, they had a general rate cut in Kansas, and that part was fine. But the mistake that they made is they then sort of adjusted their tax system. And I'm not a CPA, so I'm not going to be as precise on this as a CPA might be. But they also changed their tax code so it really favored so-called pass-through corporate entities like LLCs and S-Corps and others. Mm-hmm. So what they experienced in Kansas was, and then they eliminated the tax rate on those types of entities. So they incentivized corporations, normal business corporations, to change themselves into pass-through entities, which many of them did, obviously, and then basically eliminated the tax owed for those things. And the problem there is, you know, government policy really shouldn't favor one type of business structure over another. That should be up for the partners, investors, and owners of a company. Right. A business, the government shouldn't care whether you're a C-Corp or an S-Corp or whatever. So Kansas made the mistake of really changing that, and that's what led to some of the true problems with the Kansas tax cut, meaning you were getting less revenue in the state, but you really weren't improving growth so much, because changing your corporate structure doesn't help you grow faster or improve the economy. It just results in less tax revenue. So we want to see, your listeners are going to hear a lot of this, I bet, over the next week or two, that we're just going down Kansas's path and this is going to fail. I've seen a lot of this on social media from people who disagree with any type of a cut at all. And I just want to stress that it's just not true. Nobody that we've heard so far, and I guess it could still happen, but nobody is talking about making such a dramatic change in corporate structure tax rates right now. They're talking about individual tax rates, and I would have no problem if it included corporate tax rates as well, but they're going to keep it the same, a cut for everybody, and not doing what Kansas did, a much more simple and direct way, and also on the other end of it, to sort of raise that standard deduction to exempt more of your opening income to help lower-income workers in Missouri.
That's
so
good.
What they're proposing is really good, and it has nothing to do with what Kansas did a decade ago.
Here's a thought experiment. Is it possible to cut taxes so much that you can't maintain infrastructure, public safety, et cetera, the things that attract business, retirees, people, you know, that have discretionary money, that's what I mean there, to your state? Because you just don't, I mean, I think about the story about Mike Huckabee, what, a couple of decades ago when he took, first thing he did in Arkansas was build roads because the infrastructure was nowhere. And look what happened, you know, pretty soon you got Walmart, you got places coming in. Is it possible to be such a cheapskate on the tax front that there's not enough revenue to fuel what you need to attract business? Just ask.
Yeah, I would say yes to that. Absolutely. I'm a small government guy at a free market think tank, but I'm not an anarchist. I mean, the government has roles and things it has to do to create an environment where individual liberty and individual prosperity can flourish for everybody. And in order to do that, we need public safety. We need the guarantee of contracts through a court system. We need, as I said, public protection. We need good roads. We need, I think most people would agree, that some baseline of a welfare state. I think a welfare state in many ways is wrongly oriented and too generous in many cases, but most people would think we need something to help people who've gone through the cracks and have difficult circumstances. So we need the government, and you can cut taxes too much. Now, but I will tell you that Missouri is nowhere near doing that.
Okay.
City, municipal governments, state governments, they're swimming in money right now between federal stimulus funds, COVID funds, the fact that people all predicted the sky would fall during the pandemic and government revenues actually increased, mm-hmm. In many instances, not decreased. There is plenty of money for the state of Missouri to do the things the state needs to do to help create an environment, because they don't make our lives successful. Government just can help create and maintain an environment
where we can be
successful ourselves.
Yeah. I just ask you as a devil's advocate, because I think it is possible, and there was a time when the state coffers were not good, and I think there were cutting into the meat rather than the fat. At least that was my opinion. But at any rate, hey, David, this is always a great discussion when we have Show Me Institute folks on, and you have really hit it out of the park. I really thank you very, very much, and look forward to another discussion, man. Really appreciate it. Let's talk again.
Absolutely. Love being on the show with you, and delighted that Show Me Institute's going to be joining your show with your listeners each year. We're really excited about it.
That's great. We're looking forward to it. Thank you so much. David Stokes, Director of Municipal Policy at the Show Me Institute, showmeinstitute.org.
Well, there he is, David Stokes. Great conversation. Hey, when we come back, we're going to talk about Mark Cuban taking the gloves off with Elizabeth Warren. He says he's okay with taxes, but come on now. Soaking the rich, is that really the right thing to do? We'll ask your opinion on that. The class warfare that seems to be another MO of the Democrats as we lead into the midterms, and mix it up a little bit. So 314-912-1019, the number. Later, Virginia Cruda at 745. So lots more coming up on the Randy Tobler Show. Don't go anywhere, guys. Welcome back to the Randy Tobler Show. Virginia Cruda coming up at 7:45. And, boy, lots going on in this program today. And Leah Olmstead's done a great job putting things together. Jay Thornton, who will be hosting a new show here on News Talk STL on Friday evenings, Financial Talk and Fiscal Rants. Jason Thornton will be with us, called Pocket Watching. at 805-825, John Malcolm from Heritage. And we'll talk a little bit about where Donald Trump is at serious risk. I mean, a lot of it is just the left-stream media talking about every investigation that's going on. He was denied a suit against Hillary Clinton and her orbit from the 2016 Russiagate hoax. We're going to talk with John about that. Denied that by a federal judge last, I think it was Wednesday-ish, Wednesday, Thursday. And then Vic Porcelli, our very own Vic Porcelli, to wrap it up at 845. So lots coming up. This hour, this segment, your calls, 314-912-1019, if you'd like to weigh in. The disingenuity of the Democrats will eventually come up to beat them. You know why? Because once you tell a lie, you know this in your young life, right, Leah? You know this. Once you tell a lie, then you have to tell more lies and more lies, right? Because they just multiply like rabbits. You know that, right?
Yep.
Which is why the truth will always set you free. The truth is mm-hmm. always your friend. And we just have one after another. And speaking of lies, let's play a clip from, do you have that ready, that clip that we talked about?
I have several ready. Which one would you like?
Let's play that. That clip from billionaire Mark Cuban talking about Elizabeth Warren and about taxes, because when the government says that they're not going to slow things down, they're going to tax the rich, it's not going to have any impact. And here's a guy who, like him or not, has hired how many hundreds of thousands of people, how many millions of dollars he's paid in wages that then get circulated through the local and the state and the national economy, for that matter. Here's Mark Cuban with his thoughts about Elizabeth Warren and her soak the rich thoughts.
I don't mind being taxed more. I wrote a blog 20 years ago saying it's the most patriotic thing you can do after military service is pay your taxes, because that's what allows everybody, you know, to live and to prosper. But yeah, the idea of just soak the rich, billionaire tears that sell that cup. Mm-hmm. Screw you, Elizabeth Warren. You're everything wrong with politics.
Okay.
All right. So he calls it the way he sees it. And these are the kinds of issues that we need to be focusing on. By we, I mean those of us who support conservative causes, American conservatism, not like we see with the British today, the British conservatism that's essentially, you know, let's go to the monarchy and let's, you know, rejoice in all the regalia. That's not what I'm celebrating. I do celebrate the dignity, the stoicism, the resilience of that was emblematic of Queen Elizabeth, who reigned for 70 years. But that's not American conservatism. American conservatism is not punishing people to grow bigger government by taxing them more. American conservatism is about law and order. American conservatism is about solid borders, tight borders, borders that don't allow fentanyl to come in and kill our youth. By the way, I have to take a little detour here. Our young people are back to college. Leah, listen up.
Okay.
People in college exchange pills. I know that goes on. Adderall, pain pills, maybe some Percocet because they had a tooth pulled. And, you know, well, I'm having a bad day. I tweaked myself in the extracurricular Frisbee game we were playing. You know, these days it can kill you. There are look-alike pills that are laced with fentanyl, and we see young people across the country dying on college campuses, frankly, in high schools as well, because they're taking things that they think are just safe, that maybe, you know, it looks like someone's Vicodin. It looks like someone's Xanax. It looks like their mom's whatever. It looks like their friend's Adderall. Be very, very careful. Warn your children. Only take something that comes from a pharmacist, you know, store, from behind the counter at the pharmacy. A little warning. But anyway, we talk about closed borders, open borders. Okay, the Democrats are the party of open borders. It's killing our kids. People are streaming in with using healthcare services, educational services, social services. And soon, if the Democrats get their way, it won't be long before these people will be voting the way that the Democrats want them to do. And then, of course, there's law and order on our streets. The Soros-backed prosecutors, along with federal judges and local judges who, not federal, but local and state judges who will not bring the hammer down. We saw what happened in Memphis, Tennessee last week. with this Eliza Fletcher, how sad this woman is, such a vibrant young, a preschool teacher. Was it preschool or kindergarten teacher? Out for a jog. And she's raped and murdered, brutalized by a guy who had previously kidnapped an attorney, put him in the trunk of his car, of the attorney's car. Somehow he escaped. He didn't serve his full sentence. Then the other guy that live streamed his shooting spree that went on almost a full day. And this guy should have been in jail too, but he got out early. What in the world's going on? And instead we're focusing on Donald Trump, on, you know, which is fine if you want to do that. And we're going to talk with John Malcolm next hour. Yes, we should talk about that. But when it comes to election and campaigning and knocking on doors and discussing things across the lunch table, across the water cooler, at the kitchen table, whatever we're discussing it, at the family gathering, at the football game, on the way to the game, these things come up. And the Democrats are going to sweep victory from the jaws of defeat, which is exactly what they shouldn't do, while the Republicans might be sweeping defeat from the jaws of victory because of a misfocus. Well, here's one New Yorker who's slamming Democrats for being soft on crime. Take a listen to this clip.
Which one? Sorry.
This is clip 2, 972.
Certainly right now, there is no circumstance under which I would vote for a Democrat. And in Pennsylvania, we have a big governor race coming up. And the Democratic candidate, Josh Shapiro, has turned around and said that he does not support school closures or mask mandates, when as the attorney general for our governor, Wolf, he completely supported those policies. So I don't trust anything that they say at this point.
So I got that wrong. That's a Pennsylvania mom. My bad. A Pennsylvania mom who shows that the Democrats was that a Freudian slip? The Democrats are liars. That's what they do. They were first. This guy was for forced masking and lockdowns before he was against it, as he's running now that they've been proven not to have been of any effect. In fact, to be counterproductive and very harmful to our children. Now let's play clip 1 from that same sheet, Leah. This is a Democrat in New York slamming the crime surge there, and Democrats for being soft on crime.
As a New Yorker, for the most part, pertaining to law and order and issues of the country nationally, I believe the Republicans are better. Why? As a New Yorker that lived in New York from Mayor Koch through Mayor Bloomberg, Democrats, and particularly these days, in all honesty, as a black man telling the truth, Democratic mayors that's black, whether they male or female, Democratic police commissioners that's black, male or female, Democratic cities, they're run into the ground.
So there you go. That's a New Yorker saying, I've had enough. And we could say as much in St. Louis. Certainly they're saying it in Memphis, Tennessee. You know they're saying it in Los Angeles, Seattle, Minneapolis, all across the land. And it's got to stop. The lawlessness has to stop. And it's going to be taking votes at the state, municipal, and yes, the national level, midterms and in 24 to make a difference. When we come back, we're going to talk with Virginia Cruda about these very important issues, how they need to be emphasized, and her thoughts on the Queen's passing, some of the outrageous things being said across social media about the Queen's passing. Play a little clip from Sonny Hostin's, oh my God, how sad that was, on The View the other day, and mix it up with Virginia Cruda from The Daily Wire when we come back here on News Talk STL, The Randy Tobler Show. It's 7:39. Be right back. Welcome back to the program. Randy Tobler with you on a beautiful, still warm autumn, but getting a little cooler in the evenings, feeling more autumn-like, which we're glad to see. And hopefully we'll have a nice, beautiful Indian summer. Oops, I said Indian summer. Do we have to call it Native American summer now? I don't know. Let's ask Virginia Cruda, who is, of course, our regular guest here on the Tobler Show. And frequents the airwaves on this station. We're thankful for that. And also a prolific writer at The Daily Wire. How you doing, Virginia?
I'm good.
Do I dare say Indian Summer anymore, or is that now verboten? Will I get canceled by YouTube or Rumble or Facebook as we're streaming now?
Oh, goodness. Not. Have they not canceled you yet for other things? No.
Hey, I want to talk about a couple of things. First of all, yeah. I want to talk about some of the polls saying that the midterms are looking a little better, in fact, a lot better. Some disparate polls, actually, than the same poll we saw that 70% of Americans think that the country's going in the wrong direction, yet the generic ballot favored Democrats for the first time since May. And is it, what do you think's going on? Is it a polling problem, or is it in fact some now tailwinds behind the Democrats after the Inflation Reduction Bill, the student loan forgiveness announcement, and the Dobbs decision? How do you parse it?
Well, I think some of it is the student loan decision and the Dobbs decision for sure, but the issue that we've always had, and it really depends on, you have to look at the crosstabs of the polls. I know you know this, but the people who answer polls and the people who actually go to the polls are not always the same people. And so you run into that like you did in 2016, where the polls said Hillary Clinton was going to win in a landslide, but the people said otherwise. And so I think that you're going to see a difference when it comes to the day of voting. But I also think that there are a few people in different age groups that are being motivated by the Dobbs decision and the student. These were very, very well targeted to gear toward younger voters, because realistically, who does the Dobbs decision impact? It impacts women of childbearing age.
Yeah.
Right. For the most part, I mean, it's going to impact everybody across the board to a degree, but for the most part, that's who believes that it's impacting their lives directly. And with the student loan, you see a lot of millennials who went to college just before, the recession, and or they were graduating from college in 2008 2009 when things were not looking good.
And so, but so does that predict that the polling? So a lot of it's going to depend then, I guess, Virginia, on whether these voters who are sympathetic, these young people who are potential voters, who are of course are favored and therefore sympathetic with these goings on. The question is, will the polling, which in many cases represents registered voters, not likely voters, will they in fact be motivated enough to get out and actually vote? I guess that's really a pivotal question.
Yes,
no?
That's the real question. And we're talking about the demographic that typically votes the least.
Yeah.
So you have to believe that not only are they motivated enough to answer a poll in a certain way, but they're going to break with tradition and vote in large numbers when typically, I mean, I'm going to get the percentages wrong, but I think if you see 40% of the, people 35 and up voting, it's more like 25% if you go below 30. Yeah. Far as the number of people who actually get out to the polls, people of voting age who actually go and exercise their right. And keep in mind, it is a midterm election, and you see much lower turnout across the board in a midterm.
Right.
So there's a lot of stuff in play here. There are a lot of people who still believe that they don't really, they're not going to see the impact if they go to vote. And what I think is really moving people is, because they were able to overturn Roe v. Wade, and the Democrats actually have a pretty solid message now to say, hey, guys, elections matter. Because one, if Republicans hadn't had the Senate, we couldn't have gotten Gorsuch or Amy Coney Barrett or Brett Kavanaugh through if we hadn't had the Senate. And they say, okay, well, we need to keep control of the Senate, because otherwise you could get more.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we'll have to see where it ends up. We're talking with Virginia Kruta from the Daily Wire. Virginia, I want to talk with you about the passing of the Queen. And the left has just been over the top. We saw the, the Carnegie Mellon professor who came out and said she hoped that the Queen writhes in excruciating pain as she dies. I mean, it was unbelievable. Some of the vitriol and hatred. Sonny Hostin's, I don't know, Leah, if you've got that clip I sent you about Sonny on The View, I'd like to play that. She came out and basically said, hey, look, the British Empire, you know, was built on the backs of brown and black people, and we want reparations and yada. And certainly you can fault any empire, including the American, including the Roman, including the Greek, including all great, societies have made their missteps in as they spread their empire. That said, I think to throw the baby out with the bathwater, meaning the virtues of Western civilization, and to totally ignore it is really troubling. What are your thoughts about the Queen, her persona, what it means for the world and for the empire and for Western democracy?
I think that we have seen the last of the great monarchs, because if you look at Queen Elizabeth II, she ascended to the throne in 1952. She reigned for 70 years. She's the longest living British monarch in history. And so not only she sets herself apart there, but she was also you didn't hear about her personal life. You didn't, except for her love affair with her Welsh corgis and the jokes that she used to play on her husband and the jokes that he played right back on her. You know, these are the things that you hear about the Queen. With Prince Charles, now King Charles, we're going to hear about, we're going to relitigate Diana's death. We're going to hear about his passion for climate change. You know, with the Queen, we heard about her passion for a late night margarita. Or, she didn't mix her position with her politics. And we didn't know what her politics were because she understood her job was figurehead. That she had one job and she did it well. And, this is a woman who was bound by duty to country. She served in World War II before she ascended to the throne. She was a mechanic in the British Army.
Yeah.
You know, you don't think about that. But I will tell you the thing that really struck me about the Queen. Do I have time to tell you a quick story? She and her bodyguard were in Scotland about 10 years ago. So she was in her 80s, and the bodyguard was walking. They were going for a walk, and they ran into two American tourists who did not recognize her. And they asked her where she was from, and she told them that she lived in London, but she spent time in Scotland because she loved it there, and that was her vacation home. And they said, oh, well, if you're here a lot, you must have seen the Queen at some point. And she ribs the bodyguard, and she says, he's met her on several occasions. And so the American tourists wanted to get their picture taken with the guy who's met the Queen. So they give the Queen their camera, and she takes a picture of them with her bodyguard. And then the bodyguard says, well, you know, since we're all such good friends, why don't we all take a picture together? And so they took a picture with the Queen, and then they went on their way. Oh, and as they were leaving, the Queen says to the bodyguard, I would love to be on the wall in that room when they show their friends these photos, because someone's going to tell them. But she never told them. She never breathed a word of it, let them leave without realizing who she was. It just that kind of sense of humor, I think we've lost.
Yeah,
I think that's what we've lost with her.
I
and what people don't remember is that India, the crown jewel of the British Empire, gained independence in 1947. So the 48. The entire British Empire was essentially the UK when she ascended to the throne.
Yeah.
So it just
while people want to talk about the vices of the empire, was there some brutality? Yes. Was there racism? South Africa? Of course. However,
was it her
fault? It's like anything. When you evaluate a person, a politician, a parent, a teacher, a student, you look at the totality of their work. And if you look at what the British Empire brought in terms of the virtues of Western civilization, the civility, the technology, the architecture, the fine arts, the culture. I mean, where would some of these third world and at that point fourth world places be? Yeah.
Right. You have to look at the context, too. I mean, because compare how the British expanded their empire with how the Spanish expanded their empire.
Yeah.
Were they both brutal at times? True. Yes. But the Spaniards were called the conquistadors for a reason.
Yeah. Well, and finally, and I only have a minute left, Virginia, but finally, the other thing is, it was just a week or so ago, my little 3-year-old granddaughter was talking about at her preschool opening, she wanted to be a princess. And I think there's something that we have lost in terms of the grace, the dignity, the stoicism, the charm that has been embodied and emblematic of the queen. And you've talked about some of those things. Boy, I hope that the shrill snarkiness that we currently see goes away.
If anyone can save it, it'll be William and Kate.
Okay. I hear you. Exactly. Great, great closing comment. And you can read a couple more stories about the CBS reporter who mocked the tweet that he put out of shortly before the death of the Queen, written by Virginia Caruta at the Daily Wire. Virginia, as always, it's a real pleasure to be with you. Thanks for your right on and spot on insightful analysis. Always enjoy it. Thank you.
Yep, have a good one.
You too. There she is, Virginia Caruta. And, you know, I'm glad to hear Virginia endorsing all that was good about the Queen. And, yeah, were there some scandals? But, boy, she was really, if you talk about the super mom, she was a super mom to be appreciated, wasn't she? A strong woman, a gracious woman, a dignified woman, a resilient woman, and emblematic of nationalism, patriotism, sort of like the flag is here in the States. And boy, do you yearn for the days when leaders were leaders. And she always stayed out of the political fray, as we hope Prince Charles will do as well. When we come back, top of the hour, we're going to talk with JT from Pocket Watch that opens next Friday here at 8 to 10 p.m. on News Talk STL. So stay tuned for that and lots more.